Is this made from real lemons?
Yes.
I only like all natural foods and beverages, organically grown with no preservatives. Are you sure they're real lemons?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll buy a cup if you buy a box of my delicious Girl Scout cookies. Do we have a deal?
Are they made from real Girl Scouts?
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Greg. It's a pleasure to be back with you, back for week two. Week two,
yeah. Of spooky time spectacular.
Spooky time spectacular rolls off the tongue.
We took it to focus groups and they were big fans of the alliteration.
Yeah. We are not from the copywriting discipline of marketing.
Exactly. All my marketing work, I always have to caveat. Now, this is not consumer facing because I can't do the copywriting stuff so much.
But if you wanted to use it.
Hence why we just didn't put in any effort with Spooky Time Spectacular.
We're focusing on the product here, people. That is spooky content of varying levels of spook. Last week was The Devil's Advocate, probably more of a thriller persuasion with some satanic themes.
We're easing our way into it, you know.
Yeah.
You can't start at 11.
No, well, we've probably dialed it back a little bit this week.
We have, actually. There's more spooky time essence to it overall, but the depths of the spook are probably not quite there.
That's thematically. This week we're doing Adam's Family.
Adam's Family. Next week will be Friday the 13th, followed by Halloween 2, sort of really ramping up to Spooky Town. I think. I haven't seen Halloween 2, so we'll see. Apparently it's a drop-off from the original, but the heights of the original, even if it drops off, is not bad.
Yeah, it falls down a few flights of stairs. I'm still watching.
Yeah, exactly. Have you been embracing spooky season at all in your personal life? Any watching any spooky things?
No, not really, mate. Look, I've probably said on here before, Carol is not a fan of the macabre.
Interesting.
So it doesn't get any airtime on the main telly. And I'm deeply engrossed in The Wire at the moment, rewatching The Wire.
Oh, yeah, you're going back.
So that's that's crept in as a little bit of nighttime bed iPad situation thing. But maybe I'll like pepper in Babadook or something as we get deeper into October.
Ooh, not bad, not bad. I've been doing a lot of John Carpenter.
You have?
Because Blank Check are doing John Carpenter. So I've been watching along with that, which naturally brings along a few spooky movies, and I've been having a spooky old time over here.
Good.
It's been good.
Yeah, you were raving about The Thing, so we'll have to tick that off pretty soon.
We'll have to tick. We just need to give, Blank Check are very thorough in their coverage of these films. Doesn't leave much for us to say just yet. So we might have to give it some breathing space.
Fair enough.
But, man, great movie, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about a little film that came out in the year that was 1991.
Uh-huh.
30 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Can you believe
it? Good mathing.
That sounds crazy. I can do it pretty well when the last number's the same. Yeah.
Yeah, it helps.
It helps.
But you have to reread it sometimes because that feels like a very long time ago. 30 years.
The 90s feels like maybe 15 years ago max, right?
But mm-hmm.
Fucking 30 years.
That's what they say. That's what old people say about the 60s and shit. We are.
I know. Just,
that's us now.
It's happening. It's fucked.
Oh.
Anyway.
Look, 91.
To
cast your memory back on a global political sort of lens. It was the end of the Cold War, Tristan.
Ah.
And the start of the Gulf War, Tristan.
You got to have a war.
You got to have a war. Maybe they were a little bit chilly up there in the Soviet and hit some desert for the next 30-odd years.
Complained to HR, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you want somewhere warm? Here you go. I assume that's how it went.
Yeah, but it is pretty crazy to think that there's basically constantly a war. Fuck.
Well, there's many. There's many, but with the US lens, I guess, in this instance.
Yeah.
On a slightly more positive note, it was the start of a little show that went on to mean a lot to many. Many a student would wake up to this at midday.
Oh.
A little show that went by the name of The Jerry Springer Show, a.k.a. Springer.
Oh!
Jerry, wow. Jerry, Jerry.
What a time.
Uh-huh.
That was such a winning format. It's interesting because there were a few, right? There was Oprah, Sally Jesse, Ricky Lake.
Yeah.
And Oprah kind of went one way into like happy wellness kind of territory, and Springer went the complete opposite way.
Yeah,
Maury,
that's right.
Maury Povich, remember Maury?
Of course. Yeah, Maury was a lot closer. Well, Springer debuted in late September in 91, and it was developed basically to mimic the format and look and feel and whole shebang of fellow talk show, the Phil Donahue Show. Did you remember Donahue?
Yeah.
It came before.
I had some sick days.
Yeah, that was that Donahue. Annoying show that was on during your sick day, and you're like, I've just got to get through Donahue.
Yeah.
And then I'm Golden Girls, and then I'm riding the sweet afternoon game show train into Mighty Mouse, Danger Mouse.
Yeah. Shit. Kids will never understand these days. They've got so much content.
They pick what they want. They curate themselves, which is weird. I struggle with it, hence the constant browsing through the movie select page on any of the streaming services. So I'll give you a little whistle-stop tour of Springer, and you may or may not know this. So, yeah, originally set out to be a lot more like Phil Donahue. Apparently even Springer himself, they styled his haircut and such on of Donahue. They weren't going half-assed on that. And he did start off as a more, I guess, politically charged and highbrow program. And they had guys like Jesse Jackson on there. They were talking about homelessness and gun politics and things like that. I'm not sure what was the tipping point or where they sort of flicked the switch, but obviously they went much more into the tabloid sensationalism sort of sphere. And,
you can imagine the meetings. It would have been like an accident. And he walks off stage and he's like, I'm sorry, guys, that was a disaster. Right. And the producer's like, well, not so fast. They love it.
Can you do more a little of more of that?
And he's like, fuck yeah, I can. I have no integrity.
Exactly. Well, when you throw that, I don't know what you call it, that money, I don't know what the name of that money is, that talk show money at them, you know, everyone's for sale. So the show obviously had huge success. It was I don't know how many countries in the world it was syndicated through, but it was quite a lot. It had 27 seasons. I think it only aired its final episode in 2018, would you believe?
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, right? And because I was thinking, where's he been all these years? He's still been doing this show. And obviously Steve, the main security guard that everyone loved, Steve,
he has his own show.
He got his own show. Yeah. I think Springer's an EP on that. He's been on America.
He's Dr. Phil to... What Dr. Phil is to Oprah, correct. Steve is to...
Yeah, it's wild. This fascinates me, this whole sort of genre and clique.
Yeah.
He's really kicked on. He's now got, I don't know if you go full circle, but he's now got a courtroom sort of Judge Judy vibe show.
Amazing.
What is it called? I'm just trying to find the name of it.
Judge Jerry?
It's like Spring Court or something.
Did we both just say Spring Court?
Spring Court, yeah. Terrific shoes. So, mate, he has kicked on. It is these guys that get on the inside track in American television get a pretty good ride on the gravy train.
Yeah, especially in those days. It's so fascinating. And the irony of this guy, man, like he is being fucking toxic, embracing this drama, getting people to be horrible to each other, and then closes the show by saying...
Till next time, take care of yourself and each other.
What the fuck? That's so horrible.
Yeah.
Now, Judge Judy, there's someone with some integrity.
What about her? Did you see how she was the highest paid television?
Something crazy, right? Like 50 million or something.
Yeah, it was big. 60 million
per year. Season or something?
Yeah.
A year. Fuck.
A season.
I've got to tell you, maybe this says something about me relative to Judge Judy. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I would find it hard to do another year after just banking 60 mil.
That's what separates you from Judy.
It does. It does. My mother's name's Judy.
It is.
No relation. Yeah.
It is.
Big year for Springer. Big year for the daytime talk shows. That was an era that's kind of faded out, although maybe not. Ellen's still around.
That was going to be my other question on this. What's still going?
She's still going, technically. It's going to finish soon.
Maury's probably still going, is he?
I think it's finished. Dr. Phil's still going, but this is the interesting thing. Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz.
You have to become woke though.
Well, Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz were both spin-offs of Oprah, and they've slowly revealed themselves as absolute fucking tools. Dr. Oz, like, promoting things that don't make any bloody sense, and Dr. Phil being pretty much a dressed-up Jerry Springer to a lot of people. Like, he's not actually helping people in a lot of the cases.
No, he usually just rips on people for their insecurities.
Yeah. First you have to love yourself. And he's like all that shit with Cash Me Outside Girl, who's now for some reason a successful rapper and OnlyFans entrepreneur. But she's come out in support of others that have claimed that the camp that he sends them to abuse you and all kinds of fucked up shit happens there. So it's all fucked up. Even the air quotes good people from the Oprah family are fucked up. So it's a toxic thing.
Yeah.
Sally Jesse Raphael seemed okay, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, a big year for bloody talk shows, I tell you what.
Mm.
Big year for movies too. I mean, less talk shows in the box office though. That's probably where it's a bit different.
Yeah, yeah, you'd hope so.
Yeah, less daytime talk, more Terminator.
Ah.
Less daytime talk, more Beauty and the Beast, more Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, a text with which we're very familiar. More Hook, more JFK.
Uh-huh.
More Cape Fear, Hot Shots, City Slickers, Last Boy Scout, Point Break, Backdraft, Father of the Bride. So, I mean, it's not a bad year for movies, I tell you what. But there was one film about a little family, came in at number six. Little family, number six for the year globally. Little family, they were a little bit creepy, a little bit kooky altogether, spooky or some arrangement of those words.
Mm.
The Addams Family. Came out in November of 1991, budget of $30 million, gross box office of $191.5 million. How's that for some Romy?
Wow.
Wow.
Big numbers. How's this? I found this very interesting. I did look at this after the rewatch, so I'm coming at this from maybe I'm showing my hand here, but I was surprised to see the critic score was only 65% and audience score 66%.
Uh-huh.
Side note, if you're hearing some spooky sounds in the background, that's just the spooky storm that Sydney's decided to deliver on this fine evening. The weather likes to pair with the theme of the podcast, which is very nice of them. But this movie, critics' consensus, the movie is peppered with amusing sight gags and one-liners, but the disjointed script doesn't cohere into a successful whole. A little harsh, you might say. But we'll unpack that and once we get into the rewatch.
Pretty harsh.
Yeah, it's a bit harsh, but there's some truth there. But we'll get there. Obviously, we'll get into rewatch and all that kind of fun stuff. But back in 91 and the years that followed, Greg, was this a big movie for you?
I'm a values guy. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, that's weird because you're older than me too.
Yeah, the first one. Like I definitely watched it. I think I was probably I didn't probably get it, to be honest. The second one, Tristan, holds shall I say some poignant significance in my evolution into manhood.
Oh.
And I was okay, so when
based
I was
based on whom? Festa.
Festa, yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, I don't know, I must have been about 11 or something. Maybe 12, yeah. And, yeah, you know, discovering things. And Adam's Family Values, they go to this summer camp.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's just like all these like perfect little blonde, you know, young girls there. And so 12-year-old me was like, and I would have seen other films as well that had summer camp. So the notion itself of summer camp blew my mind.
And
we don't have that here in Australia. Your parents don't ship you off in the middle of.
Yeah.
It's genius, by the way, from a parent's perspective. Just send the kids away. Like holidays.
We can't do it here because summer is Christmas.
Yeah. And give them January, January camp. So
good point.
In my head, I had merged the idea of summer camp to form a super fantasy with Mighty Ducks 2 and the goalkeeper out of Mighty Ducks 2 I was in love with. And I had this like super – no, Mighty Ducks 2, there's a girl.
I don't remember Goldberg.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Fester is your type, yeah.
Maybe. He's a real Goldberg. Jill. I think her name was Jill or Julie or something. She was a
babe.
Yeah,
that was my chick. She was
a mega babe. Yeah. So I was obsessed. I was in love with this character from Ducks 2. So I just kind of like lived out this fantasy in my head where I met her at summer camp, like Adam's Family Values. So that's Adam's Family Values. So it was interesting to see that it was I assumed it would have been the second and been a dud because I haven't seen it in so long.
What about Christina Ricci? Were you a Christina Ricci man? She's around our age, let's be clear.
Yeah.
Before it gets weird.
I think a little bit, yeah.
this was a pretty massive one for me.
Was it?
Massive in that I think I was just the right age and it was just, it felt massive culturally, at least in my bubble of being, I don't know, 8 years old or something, 7 years old. It felt big.
Yeah.
And I was thinking it's kind of crazy because, I'm pretty sure I was familiar with the Addams Family before the movie came out.
Yep.
But it's crazy because I wasn't watching the cartoon or anything and the only live action series was from the 60s. So I guess to your point with how bad daytime TV was in Australia, I guess there were just reruns of that going on.
I reckon you're right. Because I'd definitely seen, what was the chap who played the original, like the original couple, the guy who, I forget the guy's name, who played Gomez originally.
John Astin,
like.
It's Sean Astin's dad.
It's not Sean Astin's dad, is it?
It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that his dad?
Isn't that crazy?
Can you wow me? Give me a wow.
Wow.
Again, like the more you look into pretty much any actor, they're already from a successful Hollywood family. It's pretty disheartening. Fucking hell. If your dad's not John Astin or something similar, good luck, buddy.
Yeah, good luck, pal.
And so I thought that was interesting upon reflection that how the fuck was I familiar with the Addams Family? Because that Gomez and this Gomez are my Gomez's. Looking at the origin story, I looked at the cartoons and things. These are all texts that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
It's really just the OG show and this movie. Also at the time, which probably muddied it a little bit in my head perhaps, was the Munsters. I was a Munsters man.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a Munsters man?
To an extent.
I loved it. I think there must have been a newer version of that too because I'm pretty sure it was in colour. But the whole Munsters, Addams Family thing is fascinating. Have we talked about that before? Basically, they came out at the same time. And so…
Bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know if it was NBC. Whatever one Universal owns, they heard about Addams Family happening because Addams, we'll get into the origin story of that, but they heard about Addams Family happening and they're like, what do we got? And they're like, we're fucking Universal. We've got all the classic fucking monsters. We've got Frankenstein. We've got Dracula. We've got Wolfman. We've got Bride of Frankenstein. We've got yada, 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 yada. And it's like, well, why don't we make our own kooky family out of our Universal monsters? And that was their response to the Addams Family. But timeline-wise, they basically came out at the same time.
Wow.
And
this is going to be,
interrupt
you just quickly. I feel like this is going to be, you need to have your hand in the vicinity of the wow button for this episode. I feel like you're going to drop a lot of knowledge on us.
Oh, maybe.
A lot of interesting little tidbits.
Well, yeah, that one was an interesting one for me because a bit like my Steve Martin, Leslie Nielsen mishap in my early years, which you could argue is more of a leap than confusion between Munsters and Addams Family. I got to assume I was probably a little bit confused between the two. So I don't know if I just attributed my fandom for Addams Family to the Munsters. I don't know. But there was definitely like this idea of a spooky family, a quirky spooky family, being something that I was very much into. I don't remember like watching it or whatever, but it holds some significance in my life, in my memory, in my
like
nostalgia.
Sting.
Like Sting. No, I mean, I watched it. I enjoyed it. I feel like I probably watched it on video a few times, but and then not for a long time since.
Yeah.
I think there was some rights issue which prevented it from being released or re-released on video over the years. So it kind of did disappear for a while, I feel.
Apparently it wasn't until 2013 that it was released outside of the US and maybe the UK on DVD.
Which makes it awesome for the podcast because I love the movies that you've kind of forgotten about because it was completely off the radar for a while, at least here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I certainly hadn't watched it. Although I did, full disclosure, I did watch it about a year ago. And it must have been a Halloween decision or something. But, since then I've been dying to do it on the podcast for reasons that we'll get to in the rewatch in terms of my reaction to it.
And I know we'll probably cover this in various times, but it is on Stan if you're in Australia. So if you want to watch it.
Yeah.
And you got
and
Stan.
Foxtel. I just realized.
And Foxtel. Oh, okay. Well, look, there you go. It's gone from being impossible to find to everywhere.
Let's get into the origin story.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this.
Origin story.
This movie started as a little comic strip, Greg.
Yes.
I guess I wasn't shocked to hear that, but I really didn't know the details.
In the New Yorker, no less.
The New Yorker, very highbrow stuff. 1938 it debuted in some form. Before maybe it wasn't officially called the Addams Family yet, but the characters that we've come to associate with his family started to make their first appearances in not necessarily as a group or as a family, but just in various places popped up here and there. In various one-panel comics, that was this guy's specialty, and this guy's name was Charles Adams, of all things.
Wow.
Charles Adams.
Saving his imagination for the comics, not the names, perhaps.
Well, it's interesting because this guy, I think the name is meaningful because he's a little bit creepy and kooky himself, truly a Tim Burton type of his day, although where they differ is that he's less outwardly a weirdo because he was a bit of a ladies' man.
Oh.
Apparently he dated Jackie O after JFK died.
Really?
Maybe he was the second man on the grassy knoll. I don't know. It's a little convenient, don't you think?
Well, yes. Yes, I do.
But he's a really interesting dude. He didn't only do this creepy stuff, but he definitely, his personal taste definitely skewed towards the macabre. And he was already a cartoonist for The New Yorker. He'd done a bunch of stuff that was like super successful that had nothing to do with the Addams Family. But then started introducing his characters. And a lot of this was influenced by where he grew up. I think, where was it, in Jersey or something?
Pennsylvania.
Something like that. Yeah, Pennsylvania. And there were like big Victorian houses, some of them abandoned. And, you know, you can imagine a Stranger Things type scenario where him and his buddies are, you know, exploring and imagination runs wild. And these are the guys. Yeah, exactly. These characters are the types of characters that he imagined may reside in such homes. So once he started introducing this stuff, he kind of, I guess it's something that it was successful. I don't think it was like game-changingly successful, but it was well received and he just kind of kept yes-anding it. And these characters would show up individually or in various arrangements until eventually they all showed up together as the Addams Family of Ghouls. I think was the original
ghouls.
The original names.
They didn't go with spooktacular spookathon ghouls?
Look, this guy's pretty smart, but, you know, he's not spooky times spectacular smart, let's spooky be honest. Times.
Yeah, look, he's a drawer, not a wordsman.
Yeah. Where's the alliteration? Damn fool. Despite his ignorance, a TV producer by the name of David Levy was a big fan. He's like, this is good shit. We need to make this a television program. The television was big in those days.
Uh-huh.
Remember television?
Was he related to Eugene? Is that Eugene's father?
The talkies. Oh, probably. Who the fuck knows? You know what? It probably is.
Let's go with yes.
Yeah, it's Sean Astin's dad.
Goddamn nepotism.
Now, the TV show happened, which we were just referencing before, but interestingly, something I hadn't considered was in the comic books, none of them had names, so all the names came from the TV show. And incidentally, Pugsley's name was originally going to be Poobert because that's the baby's name in Addams Family Values, yeah, I think. Yeah. Because that's a little Easter egg.
Wow.
Poobert. Poobert, and they thought it sounded a little too suggestive.
Poobert.
All the names are so great too. It's great. It should have stuck with Poobert, but anyway.
I agree.
So the comic books, at least in their early forms, in the beta stage perhaps, that started in 1938. The TV show premiered in 1964. So it's already, this is covering some period of time here.
Isn't it?
We're not even at the 80s yet. We're not even at the 70s yet. The show, I think we all know and love. Other elements introduced in the show in addition to the names were the song. By Vic Mizzy. Vic Mizzy also did Green Acres, the Green Acres theme. He was a Hollywoodman. He'd done many themes. Strangely enough, it only ran for 2 seasons. Like it was...
Really?
It was successful enough, but it wasn't like a ratings powerhouse. I think... probably diluted by the likes of the Munsters. You know, if you wanted to tune into a spooky family, suddenly you got to divide your attention across two. So I guess, you know, the audience gets fragmented and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, the spook audience. Two seasons. I wonder if they did like 40 episodes a season back in the day.
Good point. I think they did. It was the equivalent of 10 seasons now. They did do a TV movie a bit later, and this is where there's just a lot of iteration happening. There was a Scooby-Doo crossover, then a spin-off of that. There was a Hanna-Barbera animated series that only went for 1 season in 73. The cartoon apparently is not very good, but one important piece that the cartoon introduced was that Fester was Gomez's brother, whereas previously Fester was Morticia's uncle.
Oh.
Which makes a bit more sense when you consider how much Pugsley looks like Fester. Now, I'm not suggesting anything, but, you know, I'm saying.
Oh, what are you suggesting?
Just saying. Halloween special in 1977 and then kind of nothing. I think a lot of these one-offs that I mentioned, like a TV movie and a Halloween special, were intended as a backdoor pilot of sorts that if the special went well, maybe they would reboot the series.
Testing the water?
Yeah, testing the water. I get them all mixed up. One of them had the original cast, one of them didn't. Probably the 77 one had a different cast. Maybe they're getting a bit old. But then kind of nothing after 77 for a while until Mr. Producerman Scott Rudin. I can't remember the story exactly, but so let me, I'll use some creative license in this, but he's in a car with some people.
An automobile.
An automobile. Some people of varying ages, ranging from kids to adults. The kids start singing, na-na-na-na, na-na-na-na. Before you know it, the whole car's singing. And you've got 4 generations in this car. You've got kids, you've got grandparents, you've got all kinds of people. They all know the words to this song. And he's like, I'm driving a car here. This is a focus group of all fucking 4 quadrants. If I make a movie out of this, it's a surefire hit. Let's fast track this bad boy. At every level. They're truly the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles of its day.
You know what else? You can plug that pesky autumn box office gap.
Yeah, you know what? You're damn right. So he's like, I've got to make this movie. And there's some boring studio stuff in between that I feel like is probably always the least interesting part of Origin Story, so I won't go into it. But essentially Orion Pictures owned the rights, so he was forced to work with them. But they were also on the verge of bankruptcy and about halfway through had to then sell the US rights to Paramount in order to get more money to get it actually finished. Yada, yada. It all sounds a bit messy, but the movie got made, which is good. But in this process, from, you know, inception to execution, there were a few different directors attached.
Yeah, it sure was.
Yeah, yeah. Probably no surprise that the likes of Tim Burton was in the mix, but otherwise preoccupied with a little film called Batman Returns, which Uh-huh. I'm perfectly happy with that. Because, you know, Tim Burton had a bit of a stranglehold on this type of thing. So it's nice to have some other directors in the mix on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's going to make one anyway. We'll get into that. Terry Gilliam apparently was in the mix as well at some point. But, of course, we end up with Mr. Barry Sonnenfeld, someone who we've started to – perhaps someone we've overlooked. So I'm speaking for myself, I suppose. I can't speak for you on this. But I feel like maybe overlooked by many, to be honest, as a bit of a important figure in the 90s. This was his first movie, directorial debut.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't just sitting on the couch fucking eating bonbons before that. He's doing cinematography for the fucking Coen brothers.
Yeah.
This is a purebred artist we're talking about here. Now, we've talked about it before when we talked about Men in Black, a film which I think we both thought held up a lot more than we were expecting.
Absolutely.
Will this be a similar story here? Again, I just think this guy, he did some things, man. Mm-hmm. He did some things.
Oh, Bazza.
Interesting. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about him. Interestingly, he kind of dropped off soon after Men in Black 2 at least. So he's an interesting guy. I haven't quite cracked what the deal is there, but maybe he's just happy with what he's done because it's good shit. So his directorial debut, when it comes to cast, I found a couple of pre-casties, not a bunch, just a couple of pre-casties. Apparently Cher was close to being Morticia and apparently Kim Basinger as well. Basinger. I mean, it's a powerhouse cast. We'll probably break down that more in terms of performances and all that type of jazz in the rewatch, but they're all there. Amazing. They get these people and they put him in a spooky house and, you know, hands running around and many things happen and Bish Bash Bosh, you go sell a movie. And it's all very spooky and creepy and kooky. Rap party at all. What's a ghoulish bar name?
The Cauldron.
The Viper Cauldron. Rap party down at the old Viper Cauldron. Shall we watch the trailer? Or listen to for those playing at home.
By such beauty.
How can I compete? You're twice the woman I am.
Look, a new chapter.
Don't torture yourself, Gomez. That's my job.
Trigger!
That's an interesting trailer.
Yeah.
No La Fontaine. It's more just, here's the vibe. What do you think of it?
Yeah, it was like a baraka of trailers, just some scenes.
Which means, you know, the heavy lifting is now left to you, Greg, to help refresh the minds of our listeners at home on exactly what is this movie about? What happened?
So we are reintroduced to the creepy and kooky Adams. And I say reintroduced because of what you've been talking about. We knew this family. Now, in addition to their kooky ways, they've been targeted as an easy mark on account of their stupidity and seemingly endless piles of cash. And in this instance, a couple of pesky hustlers are trying to get their hands on the Adams family fortune. Now, the family lawyer is in on the act. He's been blackmailed by a loan shark for unrelated matters. And he notices that the loan shark's son looks a lot like Gomez's estranged brother, Fester. So they set it up.
Mm.
They take Fester back to the Adamses, Fester being Gordon,
And he's to go on and infiltrate the family, get on the inside and clean them out. That's the plan they've got.
Classic switcheroo.
Exactly. But Tristan, what they hadn't planned for was that behind the ghosts and ghouls and skeletons and broths of blood and bone lies a family so sweet and loving.
Yeah.
That even an evil imposter might be swayed. So, Tristan, above all, this film, The Addams Family, this film is a celebration.
Mm.
It's a celebration of one of the most ubiquitous yet undervalued entities in life, the family unit. The love and the close bondedness that plays out before us in the shape of the Addams is such a timely reminder as we sit here, stuck here with our weird children and partners that we want to strangle. So we must embrace the weirdness within our own families and simply enjoy our time together and love one another and embrace our quirks.
Yes.
Sure. You could argue that it's easy to be creepy and kooky when you're minted. You go from being crazy to eccentric. But that's not the point, Tristan.
Yeah.
But this film is about family values and the love therein. So it's a love story, a family love story, and a bloody good one.
You're damn right, man. Fucking lovely. What a lovely picture.
It's a lovely picture.
This has to be the most loving family, one of the most loving families I've ever seen in a movie without it being sickly sweet, and maybe that's how it all fits together nicely. But it is so loving. And oh, sorry, we'll get more into that. But in terms of initial reaction to this movie, well, it's just, Well, this, I guess it's at the core of my initial reaction to this. It's just what a pure delight it is. It is just
I used the D word too.
Yeah. I think we both use it a lot.
We use it most. I think I say it most often. It's a good point.
Yeah. But in the truest sense of the word, this is a delightful film. It is full of delight. And I think, you know, maybe the argument, maybe it's so delightful because that love we're talking about is in direct contrast to all the macabre. And yeah, maybe that's true. Whatever the case is, it's delightful. And I don't know if it just hits different.
Part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it just hits different these days, but it feels so refreshing to watch. I'm so surprised at those Rotten Tomatoes scores.
Because it's better than that.
It's better than that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just, you know, I mean, a big part of this podcast is the context at the time versus the context now. And this may be one of those rare ones where it's somehow gotten a lot better. Maybe this wasn't all that interesting at the time. You know, maybe sitcoms on TV were all full of sickly, sweet, loving families. I don't know. And now it's more, you know, the Always Sunny in Philadelphia of the world.
It's like, I think there's an astute button push there, Tristan.
Very astute on your part.
There's a lot more. I mean, the drama of the time might have been DJ on Full House skipping school.
Yeah. Exactly. So maybe
and learning a valuable lesson.
Yeah. Whereas now everything is dark probably and gritty.
The DJ would be, you know, shooting heroin into her vagina and going on a shooting spree.
Exactly. We've got all these dark, any HBO show basically. You know, you've got an anti-hero and all that. And I guess you could argue that cosmetically, or at least on some superficial level, there's a bit of that here, in that it's dark and gritty aesthetically, and you know they do some creepy and kooky stuff, but it's all love behind it. And I think that's the other thing too, is like, this is not a secret, this is not like a deep interpretation of the film. It is so much about acceptance and being okay with being different and all that kind of shit, and how, and the parents being so supportive of the kid, everything about it, it's so lovely. It's delightful.
I was just about to say, or add to what you were saying, specifically about how supportive the parents are. Like, you could almost, you could have fun doing Pop Critic's dissection of modern parenting, and use them as like the archetype of what
And embrace your kid's weirdness.
Embrace the weirdness, support, encourage, positivity.
Like, you know, in a classic Chuck Lorre sitcom or something, it would be like, or Laurie, Chuck, I don't know what his name is you know, the kid's going through a weird stage. What does this mean? Or like, God forbid, my kid's gay or something.
Yeah.
You know, like that's always like the shenanigans versus this is like, fuck yeah, son. Like, do your fucking thing, man. Go stab your sister.
Bravo!
And maybe we shouldn't take it too literally, but, you know, I guess that's the other thing too. They are kind of actually pretty fucked up. Like, Pugsley steals a lot of stop signs. He may be responsible for a few deaths, but his family's very supportive.
Yeah, look, my dad could relate to Gomez on that one. I had a penchant in my early drinking years for coming home with street signs.
Yeah, I've got some street signs.
Oh my God, my dad's garage was full of like, yeah, no, they weren't causing accidents, the things I stole, I don't think.
Yeah. Just lost pizza delivery drivers. Yeah. And on that, actually, fucking the attention to detail. Well, no, it's not attention to detail.
The little things.
It's just the little things. Later in Pugsley's room, there's just all these stop signs in the background. And so I guess I'm saying my initial reaction to this, and a lot of this is also based on my rewatch from a year ago, is just fucking pure joy and delight. A good fucking movie, man.
Yeah.
Good movie. How was it for you? It sounds like similar.
Man, 100%. It was just like a little warm hug. It was a happy movie. It was, I mean, I'll probably talk to the next point because I agree with everything you said. I think the cast was like perfect.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about that now? That was a big part of why I love this movie.
I think you're right, because the thing is, when I read out the critic consensus before, it's kind of true. Like, the movie is peppered with amusing sight gags and one-liners, but the disjointed script doesn't cohere into a successful movie. Like, you could definitely argue that, well, I'd say there's more than sight gags, but I would say it is all the things we talked about plus the cast. Well, it's the cast that delivers all the things we talked about, I guess, essentially. And I think I kind of don't give a shit about the plot in this.
I don't even know if he was the brother or not. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, apparently he was. Apparently, earlier on it was more ambiguous and then they decided to make it more concrete. But yeah, I think it's more about all those feelings that this movie made us feel is the value of this movie. I don't give a fuck about the plot. The plot's just there to serve all of those things, to give some foundation to delivering those feelings. But I'm not like, I don't give a fuck. I don't care about the plot. But yeah, it's the cast that makes this a fucking thing because, yeah, in less capable hands, it could have just been pretty one-dimensional.
It could have missed.
To be fair, a lot of the one-liners are pretty cheesy, but somehow these guys take it to a level where it's kind of okay. Why don't we go through it as in the order as listed in Wikipedia? So Angelica Houston as Morticia Adams.
Wow.
She's so good.
She's great. She's so
what
good.
What a matriarch.
And it's actually, it is kind of a fresh take. I did watch some of the old Addams Family on YouTube and like her voice is quite different. And her voice is actually quite high pitched and like soft almost. But it's, but she still feels like very, she doesn't seem like a soft person. Like it's interesting.
Soft but strong.
Strong. And she is kind of the boss.
Yeah, there's that really powerful scene where she's sort of cradling Gomez when they've been evicted and he's asleep and he's basically spiraling. And she's there like kind of keeping the shit together, keeping the family together, awake in the middle of the night, kind of plotting how she's going to fix things. That was nice.
It was cool. And physically, like, it's pretty iconic. Like that is, when I was watching the old ones, pretty much aside from Gomez, which I think Gomez in the old TV show and Gomez in this are probably neck and neck in terms of the iconic version in my brain. But
yep.
As far as Morticia goes, like, this is Morticia. Apparently there was a lot more going on with her costume than I realized. Apparently she was wearing a pretty intense corset.
It was like metal.
Yeah, and she couldn't, like, chill out between takes. I don't think she could even sit down.
Which makes you respect it even more, right?
Yeah, and they did this shit with her eyes where they, like, it looks like I'm being racist when I'm visually describing this to Greg, but they did something where they pulled the skin back so her eyes kind of slanted upwards, which apparently is a beauty thing now, by the way. Like the Bella Hadids of the world, it's like a popular surgery to get that pulled back.
Like this? Yeah,
that's why they always look like a little surprised or like, I don't know what that look is. What would you call that?
Asian?
It's like a different thing though. It's like
I
don't know what it
is. That's kind of what they're going for though, right?
I guess, but it's not. It doesn't look Asian, I guess. Does it? Like it doesn't. I didn't look at it and go, oh, she looks Asian.
No, I didn't, but.
It may be some like, it's some way to look air quotes exotic or something.
Yeah, which I guess let's go with exotic.
Somehow, but it's probably rooted in like some kind of Asian thing. But yeah, apparently that's like a thing women are doing these days as well, is actually getting surgery to get that look.
Fuck.
Like they say, that like permanent. Bella Hadid has had that. There's also, I know this because Ara told me, there's like you can tie your hair a certain way and you pull the hair back.
And it like pulls.
To get that look as well. Yeah.
No, I can't do that.
Grow out the bangs just for that. Greg suddenly looks different about you. And you're like, is it my eyes? And I'm like, yeah, not so much.
It's the eyes.
It's more the ponytail.
It's the four strands of hair on each side of your head pulled tightly back to form the world's smallest ponytail.
A bit of a man bun. Let's talk about Gomez, Raul, Julia. Man, fucking powerhouse.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. These two together as well. This is chemistry. This is fire. Cara mia.
Oh, this is the thirstiest couple I've seen in a film for a while.
And how good is that? In a film for a while. It's 30 years later. Like this is a couple that fucking loves each other. They express that. This is couple goals right here.
It is. I mean, probably not for their friends.
Less I think so, yeah.
I'd be pretty distraught if you and I started having some of these conversations if we were out for dinner.
God, me. Well, you just, Ara hasn't spoken French in front of you. You haven't seen the reaction. But, No, it's part of the legacy as well because apparently, you know, was it just a couple of episodes ago we talked about the Hays Code and all the rules in being too sexually suggestive in television and movies. This was the television show of the Addams Family was the first TV show to show them in the same bed. And also the first show to have any sort of implication that these two actually were intimate.
Did it more than twice.
Yeah, yeah. And so they are kind of an iconic couple in terms of expressing love. And
there you go.
That's definitely here in this movie.
Absolutely.
It's so I think another refreshing thing to see.
It's fascinating that, yeah, like you said, 30 years on, we're still viewing it with that lens like that
It feels fresh to see that. Isn't that bizarre?
And
I don't know what I've been watching where that's not there. Like it's not like I've been watching things where I don't know something about this.
Too much it's John Carpenter.
Yeah, could be. But I mean, I don't know what else to say other than how fucking good is he in this. All the shit with he's so emotional. That's the other thing too. Mm. In a world of, I guess, you know, toxic masculinity is making a bit of a comeback. He's not afraid to show his emotions. He kisses his brother on the face or maybe even on the mouth. He's heartbroken. He's showing every range of emotions in this.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the support of the kids and all that kind of shit. It again, it's just like, and the performance-wise, he pours everything into it.
Yeah.
And the train scene, his train scene is just so funny to me. Because I guess the train set thing is a trope of, I guess, dorky dads. And so it's kind of funny that this creepy and kooky dad
still has his trains.
I guess he still has a train set. And I guess that's why it's such a disaster that he's gone to the train set, because that's what other losers do. But it's so funny.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre. And I think you got to give the film a lot of credit for putting that shit in there, because I don't think that's not something from the TV show or the – if you look at, like, you know, that origin story and how pretty much every execution of this has added something to it. Mm. This film very much does the same. It's like a logical progression of making it better and better.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christopher Lloyd, when I was a kid, I don't think I realized this was the Back to the Future guy. Obviously, later in life I did. But it's such an unexpected choice, really. You wouldn't he's like, you picture him as a tall, skinny guy. You wouldn't kind of expect him to be a Fester. But, man, fucking great again.
Nails it. Sir Anthony Hopkins had turned it down, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
That would have been shit.
He would have. It's just a whole different energy, isn't it?
This guy's bringing Doc energy. Yeah. He's got that weird energy, doesn't he?
It looks like one of those things in, is it the Yeps in Sesame Street? Yep, 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 yep.
Yeah. I think we're bordering on being an incredibly boring podcast, because we're basically going to go through all these names and say how awesome they were. But fuck, we got to give credit here.
Yeah.
How bloody, so good.
Where are we up to?
Just so Wednesday. Good. Okay, now we're getting heavy hitters here. This is – Christina Ricci is unbelievable in this movie.
Richie?
So, I don't know.
I think it's Richie,
Christina,
man.
Richie. I think it's Richie. Yeah, I think you're right. She is so good in this, man.
So good. So
and
good.
And I think she was born in 1980, so I guess she was 11 or maybe 10 when they were filming it. So older than she looked. I'm watching it, I'm going, fuck, she's a little kid and she's acting like this. But I think she just looked a lot younger than she was.
Yeah.
But still, like, we talked about this. You know, I think we've talked about how I'm not a big fan of child actors just because they're not very good at acting generally. But Macaulay Culkin, good. Christina Ricci, even better. This is maybe, I think, one of the greatest child performances of all time. It's so good.
She's amazing. Apparently the the sleep.
Oh yeah, that was her idea.
She sleeps like a. She just goes back to sleep like a vampire. Crosses her arms over her chest. That was her idea. She's like 10.
She's so good with it. It's so understated. Sounds like a weird word because it's extreme in a way. But her face is so calm.
Yeah,
and she says these things with such like. She's kind of got this gravitas towards her.
Yeah.
She's this little feeble looking girl, yet somehow it's amazing. Yeah. Every line is delivered so perfectly, and you know, I hate when it's a child actor like trying to act what they think is how an adult acts, and it just comes across as all this weird thing. And I get it, they're kids, what do they know? But that's why this it's so amazing.
I'm glad you didn't save your I hate child actors rants for when we had our mate on for Kindergarten Cop.
He's good though, actually. That's another one. I'd put in Adam Wiley as another one of the greats. He cried on cue, man.
He did.
That's impressive. Jimmy Workman as Pugsley. Now he's operating at a different speed here to Christina Ricci. But it works.
It works.
Yeah. Judith Molina is grandmama. I mean, she's there. She's awesome. But she doesn't have a lot to do other than act wacky. Carol Struck it. I don't know how to say his name. As Lurch. But he's that guy that's been in lots of things. I'm sure we'll probably talk about him more in another movie.
Yeah. Sorry. I'll look him up. I don't know.
He's been in lots of the Rob Zombie movies, I think. Or is that a different
one? Oh, there he is. Yeah, not him. Doctor Sleep.
Yeah, he's been in – he's got like this niche. I mean, he's a tall, shall we say, interesting-looking guy. He's been in lots of stuff, man.
Scary-looking man. He's 7 foot.
Yeah.
Dutchman.
Not to be confused with Michael Berryman. Who's that other creepy guy that's in all the Rob Zombie movies?
Ah.
And then you got a bunch of other people after that. We probably don't need to go through all them. But I think all those people together, fucking hell, man. Jesus.
Yeah.
What a cast.
They really complemented each other, Tristan. There's a certain je ne sais quoi when you get the right group of people together.
Man. More powerful than the sum of their parts, you might
so
say.
So much more powerful than the sum of their parts.
Yeah. Obviously, there's been subsequent movies. There's been animated ones recently. But Burton's finally doing it.
Yeah.
With an interesting cast. I know you had some thoughts on recasties as well.
I did.
Should we, yeah.
We could talk there. So who's? So who's?
We can compare and contrast.
Yeah. So I purposely didn't read about that prior. So I didn't know Burton was doing it. And I had thought Burton could do this and you could have like a Johnny Depp type as Gomez.
Yeah, that would be the obvious, wouldn't it? That's like, and there were rumors of that. And Eva Green as Morticia.
Yeah, I didn't think of her. I'm not big to me. I think she is it, apparently.
No, it's Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, right. So Catherine Zeta-Jones and...
And Luis Guzman.
Yeah.
How good is that? You know what I love about that is that I actually like Johnny Depp. I don't know what's going on in his personal life, but Gomez Adams, Johnny Depp is like, yeah, I get it, but fuck.
It didn't quite stack up, did it? Like it was like
Luis Guzman.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Man, that's interesting. And especially if you look at the original comics, like he's a bit more of a strumpy guy.
Slightly more portly.
Portly, yeah, that's a good word. So it sounds unconventional, but then you imagine it with a moustache as well and it all starts making sense, saying, cara mia. Like it's, it works.
Well, I had gone, I went a fair bit more Latin as well. So I was Johnny Depp could do it if it was Burton. I was like, Steve Carell could probably do it. And then I was like, And then I was like, all right, well, Morticia, I think Sofia Vergara could be a great Morticia. And so then I was like, I don't know, she needs a man next to her.
Yeah.
So then I landed like either like a Benicio del Toro or a Javier Bardem.
Oh, good.
I could see either of them doing it.
Keep going.
Yeah, I like.
But, you know, Javier Bardem could probably do Fester as well. So then I was like, so that's my couple. And then I thought Aubrey Plaza would have been great a few years ago for Wednesday.
Oh, fuck yeah.
She's probably a bit old now.
Yeah.
So like Millie Bobby Brown, is that too obvious?
Yes. Sorry.
I don't know any other 10-year-old actresses.
Yeah, neither do I. It becomes difficult.
And then I had our friend, big friend of the show, Brendan Fraser as Lurch.
Yeah.
And I'd die.
He's quite tall.
He's a tall man. Yeah. And, but, you know, you'd have to change Lurch a little bit to suit Brendan, but that would be worth it. And maybe like it's a Bryan Cranston for Fester. I think like he could do the similar sort of Christopher Lloyd energy.
Yeah, that's interesting. Put some kind of, I guess, put some weight on. But that's the interesting thing with Christopher Lloyd. It's like I can't tell if he put on weight or if he just kind of carried himself differently and put on a big coat. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I feel like he must have done the latter. I don't think he was doing a Christian Bale on us.
Yeah.
I gained over 600 kilos for that role.
I'm glad you didn't say Jared Leto or something as Gomez. Or Fester for that matter.
No, he's left out.
The animated, I didn't do recasties because I had those other ones in my head, plus the animated ones. I haven't watched the anime. I wanted to watch the animated movie because I thought I saw it on one of the streaming services. It looks pretty meh. I think fundamentally, I know it started as a comic, so it's ironic, but it's just less appealing as a cartoon because I think it's more striking as real humans being this absurd but playing it straight. Like to me, that's the part of the magic versus cartoon. It's like, well, of course, all cartoons are weird. Like it kind of loses its edge a bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like the cartoon. I think I watched the 70s one a few times. I think it must have been on rotation somewhere.
And I think there's been some since after this movie on Cartoon Network and things.
Yeah.
But in the animated film from a couple of years ago, which actually the sequel, Adam's Family, the animated whatever, 2, comes out today that we're recording this.
Really?
October 1st, 2021, the day we're recording this.
Norwich, I love these coincidences.
It comes out today.
Every time we get these coincidences.
Especially when it's not someone dying.
Yeah. Yeah, something.
Those ones
well,
suck.
We can have death ones in at this time of year.
That's true. But in the cartoon, in the animated one, Oscar Isaac as Gomez Adams, which is not bad. Some of these work for voice but don't translate, but that one could translate.
Oh, Charlize Theron. I have to look him up.
Oh, yeah. I could say that in your face.
What's he?
Charlize as Morticia. He's a Star Wars.
Oh, him.
I think
he's got a beard. He plays in different pictures.
He plays General Star Wars, I think. Charlize as Morticia. Chloe Grace Moretz in casting just as inspired as yours, I think, on that one for Wednesday. And Finn Wolfhard. Oh, how ironic. Finn Wolfhard is Pugsley, who is basically the male Millie Bobby Brown. He's the guy from Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nick Kroll is Uncle Fester, which I thought he was Gomez. But anyway, there you go. And this is where you can start to tell what kind of movie this is. Some stunt casting. Snoop Dogg is Cousin It. He raps in it. It's like you get into that cartoon rapping It. This is not a movie I'm interested in. Although this film is not immune from a rap soundtrack. We'll get into that in a second.
Can you rap the Mamushka?
No.
Mamushka.
But you know who can rap the Addams Family, the Addams Groove is Sir MC Hammer. Do you remember this?
No, but I think the timing correlates clearly with his bankruptcy.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a good example. A, it was the style at the time. But B, just looking at that, watching that video, I know you guys couldn't see it, but watching that video, MC Hammer, a great. We've talked about doing a music version of this podcast and looking into the music world and do things hold up and what the fuck happened there. And that's such a good example. MC Hammer is such a good example of that.
Yeah.
Because it's fascinating. I've kind of forgotten all about him. I know he was big on Twitter for a while there.
What was he doing on Twitter?
Yeah, he was like an early Twitterman in general. And he became sort of a quasi spokesperson for them as, hey, everyone's following MC Hammer on Twitter. And he spoke at conferences and things as like, how to use Twitter, and I can't remember. It's just
how
weird.
To best use 250 characters or whatever. 20, how many characters do you get on there?
I think it was, more just like when Twitter was starting to blow up, and it was like you can imagine an advertising agency going, well, let's speak to someone quirky who's blown up on Twitter and getting him. But that song was a top 10 hit in the US.
It's a good song.
Also,
for the moment.
Golden Raspberry winner of Worst Original Song. It peaked at number 4 in the UK. I think that was the highest it peaked around the world. It peaked at number 12 in Australia. And the most immune to the charms of old MC Hammer, a Burrell, by the way, he's a Burrell, was Canada with it only peaked at number 67 in Canada. It was part of the MC Hammer album, Too Legit to Quit.
Ah. Big song.
Yeah, this is the thing. That song, yes. And then I look at that album, the rest of the songs, I don't remember them at all. So.
What about the song, the title track?
Aside from that song.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant. There's two.
But yeah. But that song and then, yes, the name of the album. And then looking at the rest of the titles on the album.
How many albums did he have?
So you're right. I don't know. It must have only, I reckon, max 3. Because what was the one that Can't Touch This was on? What was that? Was that album called A Can't Touch This?
If I had to guess, I would have said that's the, that one you said. Was that called Hammer Time?
Maybe. Yeah, that sounds probably right. Oh, that might be the third. That sounds like a bankruptcy album.
Bankruptcy album. He did spend all his money.
Was it like Don't Make Him Mad? Or what is it? Don't Make Him, what is it? Don't Hurt Him. Yeah, that was something like that, wasn't it?
I really don't know.
Okay, it's Too Legit to Quit, let's get started. Oh, yeah, Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him. That's the one.
Wasn't he a pastor?
He's got a lot of albums. He's got so many albums, man.
Has he? He was a pastor, wasn't he?
Oh, some of these are greatest hits. Is he? I think that's Mace.
Oh. Is Mace a pastor?
I think that's, I think so. And I think it's MC Hammer too. And Malice, I think.
Scratching your name on the blimp.
Is that what he says? That's all right. I can only do the mumbly version.
It's a shame they didn't give him a cameo of sorts.
Yeah. Well, they had the opposite. The music video was full of the cast doing silly things. You know, in line with a, who you're going to call, in line with a Ninja Rap. Ninja Rap came out the same year, by the way.
Oh, what a year for rap themes, film I mean, theme songs.
Yeah. Adam's Groove and Ninja Rap, it is truly the Munsters and Adam's Family of its day.
It's very astute.
It's very astute on your part.
It's also a segue because I got a little surprise for you, Greg.
Oh, okay.
A little little quiz, a little rapid fire.
Oh.
Because I thought it was interesting.
Tables have turned.
That Munsters was a blatant ripoff of Adam's Family.
Yeah.
But Munsters is not bad. And if I had to choose in terms of television show, I probably liked the Munsters more.
Ooh.
So I've curated a list here across different media of copycat versus original and vice versa. And I want you to tell me which one you prefer. Go with your gut. You know, you can elaborate if you want. You know how these things work, but you don't have to explain each one because I've got quite a few. So first up, TV show. Adam's Family or Munsters?
I don't know. Adam's Family.
There you go. Point Break or Fast and the Furious?
Point Break.
Correct. Halloween or Friday the 13th?
Halloween.
Maybe we'll find out next week. Yeah.
Oh, Halloween or Friday the 13th. If you'd asked me before we covered Halloween, the original, when we did last year, whatever it was, I would have said Friday the 13th. So I'm a new Mike Myersman.
Yeah, interesting. John Matrix or John Rambo?
Ooh. Oh, that's tough. I gotta go Rambo. Rambo.
It's hard to not, I guess, cultural legacy and shit. Back to movies, E.T. or Mac and Me?
Mac and Me.
Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark or Romancing the Stone?
Raiders.
Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom or in Diana Jones in the Temple of Poon?
Poon.
I got very excited when I came up with that one.
Poon.
Poon. You had me at Poon. It was the last word. Bloodsport or The Quest?
I'll have to go. Ooh, not tough question. I'll have to go Bloodsport.
Bloodsport or Kickboxer?
Bloodsport. Wait.
Bloodsport or Lionheart? The list goes on. No, it's only those
two. I actually did think about that when we did them back, you know, a couple of years ago, and I did definitively land on one more than the other. I think it was Bloodsport.
Over I think Kickboxer. I was the same. Yeah, I think I landed on that too. If I had to choose one, like if one got removed from history, you couldn't remove Bloodsport. Sudden Death or Die Hard?
Die Hard.
And then finally, Time Cop or Looper?
Time Cop.
Keep going.
It's better than Looper. Time Cop is better than Looper.
You have wonderful taste in movies.
Who curated those questions?
Me.
Was that just off the internet?
It was off the dome.
Oh, I love
off
it.
The dome. Oh, that's why you get Temple of Poon.
Temple of Poon.
Should we get into verdict?
Let's do it. We're going to relieve my wife of our children that we love so dearly.
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
I am the law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further,
Your Honor.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Man, my overall thought on this one, fucking good movie, man.
Yeah.
I feel like without just repeating myself, I guess the other piece I would add, which I touched on, is just that I think Sonnenfeld is perhaps an undervalued, important piece of 90s movies.
Yeah.
Between this and Men in Black, like we said, Men in Black held up like a motherfucker, way more than I expected. I thought it was going to be trash, to be honest. And in this, I thought something similar up until a year ago when I rewatched it. But they're both fucking special.
Do you remember? I totally agree. Do you remember we talked about, I think we talked about some of the way he, like the way he deals with relationships and sort of sentiment. There's,
right,
like if you look at Men in Black, like it was more emotional and more emotive, I should say, than I had recalled previously watching it. And then, you know, there's a little bit of the backstory of Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, that's right.
And there's a bit going on there. And I think he seems to have like a pretty good way with, you know, conveying.
Good balance. Yeah. It doesn't feel too schmaltzy. Like if for whatever reason you never saw this movie and you heard how we were just describing it, it probably sounds horrible. But it's not that the movie, it's like a perfect balance of all these things. It's not that it's all just schmaltzy.
Yeah.
Like family love stuff. It's just, that's just sort of undercurrent throughout with all this other macabre overlaid. Mm. So you don't feel like it's too much of a fucking, you know, Seventh Heaven or something. But it's, what a fucking joy.
Yeah.
100% rewatch.
Yeah.
100% rewatch.
Yeah, same goes for me. It's a rewatch. It's like it's just nice, easy viewing, you know. Don't go in expecting too much now that we've sung its praises for the last hour and a half. But, you know, it's
a good
pretty,
point.
You know, it's still pretty light viewing. Yeah. But it's just like great performances. It's a feel-good movie. It makes you feel good.
It is. It's a feel-good. And there is some, it's coming from the right place. It's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
Acceptance. Be different. Embrace your differences.
Yeah.
And your kids too. Let them be them.
Yeah. I think the premature passing of Raul Julia is kind of accentuates that a little bit. Like just seeing what a, in this role particularly, seemed like such a lovely guy.
And apparently there was potentially, this was going to be a trilogy. So that's a bummer.
It's a yes. Do I give it 3.5 or 4? I don't know.
Yeah, I'd probably give it if I had to. Again, I'm trying not to do stars too much because I feel like it's all subjective, so I don't want to like put a stamp on it. But yeah, I would put a 4 at least. I think
there you go. Maybe 7, like a 7. Like a Middle Eastern hotel, like a.
7 stars.
Yeah. Dubai and UAE and whatnot. They love a lot of stars, I'm led to believe.
Did Simpsons do it? Fuck, I forgot to check.
Yeah, I've probably seen them. Yeah, I think I've seen them dressed up as the Addams Family. Probably.
And I was also thinking early Simpsons is kind of similar to this. In that they were an unconventional, well, not unconventional family, they were sort of the classic dysfunctional family, but on the surface, like not a, air quotes, good family. Like Homer would choke Bart and shit.
Yeah.
But especially in the early seasons, Homer was incompetent but well-intentioned. Mm-hmm. Eventually he just became more of a buffoon, bit of a Peter Griffin.
Oh, he was always
well. But in the earlier seasons.
I thought he was well-intentioned even later.
Later, I mean as in post-season 12, no longer watched. It's just kind of random.
Yeah, it's just.
I'm an idiot and stuff.
Fair.
Yeah. But, you know, he's getting his work into the quickie mark because he wants to buy Lisa a pony. Like there's something nice and pure about it. So did Simpsons do it? I can't remember. But there's definitely a vibe there that's similar. Porn parody.
Yep.
I assume there is. I don't really want to look
that
one
up. The Addams Family gangbang.
Probably. FX test, yes. Thing was done very well.
Good makeup.
Various other things. Good makeup. There's a touch of outdatedness in some of it, but I think only in ways which that makes it more charming, I think, really. Yeah, it's an aesthetic, man. Like early Burton, similar kind of vibe. Recasties we've covered. And MVP is, this might be the toughest MVP decision of all time. I'd give it to all of them if I could. But for me, I think just due to shortage of performances, I guess I got to give it to Raul for me.
Oh, I was going to give
but
it to
Wednesday
the
was close. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Fair
what
enough.
A cop out. I think it, for me, it was just the
it's all of them.
Yeah. It was an all-star performance. You know, the cast. I think I said this like last week. I've said it very recently, so I apologize for repeating myself on a completely different film. But just when you're like, this cast is working, man.
It matters, doesn't it? Fuck. It does. I know that sounds obvious when you say that. Yeah. But we do cover so many movies that when you see when it works, you realize, fuck, it's important. Mm. As I was watching it, I'm like, oh, Christina Ricci, definitely MVP. And then 5 minutes later, oh, Christopher Lloyd, MVP. Mm. Like they're all fucking amazing. So if we haven't oversold it enough and if you haven't watched it recently, man, go fucking watch it right now. It's spooky season. What better time? Get the whole family involved.
Get the family involved.
Because the ones we're doing next week, not so much. Yeah. You've got to watch them by yourself in your man cave or something.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, maybe find us on the socials. Maybe leave us a review in Apple Podcasts. That would be dandy.
Yeah, if you love the reviews, they help with the algorithms, you know. So
they do. They really do.
Yeah, we've got to try and counterbalance our marketing budget of zero versus some of the larger podcast networks, which have a marketing budget of larger than zero.
Much more than zero. Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
At least 10 times.
At zero. Least 10. Very good.
Until then, we'll see you next week for Friday the 13th.
Stay spooky.
There you go. Yeah.